Hey, Anna, you know, we always talk about planets a lot, but moons get no respect. The moons in the solar system, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I worry about it a lot.
They get overlooked. They're neglected.
Or not looked at all.
Or not looked at or not even thought of at all.
That's right.
But let's think about it today. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about moons all around the solar system. And we've got Jupiter's been in the news. But Jupiter, whenever we could see Jupiter in our telescope at the observatory, we see four moons,
mm-hmm.
which are really cool. You've seen this, right?
Yes, it's very cool.
And
agreed.
So you can see this little planet with stripes on it and these four little dots around it.
Mm-hmm.
And the moon's names are?
Something you're going to share with us now.
Io.
Bam!
Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto.
I only know Io, so I didn't want to like do the rest of it.
Oh, that's
what in a four ain't bad.
That's all right, not bad. Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. Now, these four moons, do that ring a bell for any mythology?
Yes. That's why I know Io.
Why do you know Io?
Because Jupiter being Zeus, Io was one of his many, we'll say paramours.
Yeah,
because,
that's a good way to say it. Yeah.
And then Zeus's wife, Juno, I guess, for Jupiter, got mad and turned her into a cow.
Yeah, so there
that
we go.
That was a really, like, that was a power move.
I know. And then there's Europa,
yeah.
who was another love interest of Zeus's. That's
a
and
nice
then
way to say it.
He courted her by turning into a bull.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Ganymede, the cupbearer, the former prince of Troy that was brought up to be his good friend.
Right.
And then there was Callisto, who he also, kind of wooed as well. And so all these moons are associated with Jupiter. And so for anybody out there who wants some good stories, Jupiter and the four moons, check them out.
He didn't need Tinder.
Exactly. No, I don't know what he used. But anyway, from the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we are both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean's the astronomer, and I have lots of questions about astronomy. In this episode, Paul Sutter from The Ohio State University, the Center for Science and Industry, otherwise known as COSI, Astro Tours, and the movie UFO, joins us. Busy guy. All right, so we're talking moons. They're the disenfranchised members of the galaxy
or whatever.
They're always forgotten. Well, they're having their moment though, because as I read, Jupiter they found 12 new moons.
Yeah, not just one or two. They found 12.
Where were they? Like, what do you mean they found them? Like, you had four, we upped it to 16. Is it 16 total or 12 total?
No, so four was what we can see with our Hubble telescope at the Cincinnati Observatory.
Right.
The Hubble telescope can see a whole lot more than that. And so Jupiter's moon count is now at 79.
Oh my gosh, 79? So 12 new ones on top of
the 67 they already moved on. I know, this is something that's... It's hard to keep up with all these new
moons. It's a funny image, like a big ball. I'm imagining a big ball with a bunch of little balls all around it.
that's about it, actually. Why is that funny?
It's a funny image.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Like one big, planet, and then all these little tiny ones just like chilling around it.
See, as
like
you know, I'm a romantic, so I think of having 79 moons in your sky, lighting up your night sky. You know, wouldn't that be romantic? And you're just like, look at all those moons. We only have one.
It would
one.
Actually creep me out. I have
You'd
a thing
like,
about
moon,
like clusters.
Moon,
I'd be
moon,
like,
moon.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's a lot of moons.
But you know, you could probably actually name each one of those for one of Zeus's side pieces.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because the man was busy.
Oh, yeah.
Getting busy.
A lot of
Sorry,
them
kids.
Are, actually. But, you can check that out. But, 79 moons now around Jupiter, so that's the leading one. And it was just because this new survey came out with some better techniques they could detect these. Most of them are really tiny, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, some
How
of
tiny?
Them, the smallest one I thought was red was only about a mile in diameter. So you could do, like, a race all around it. Like, it would be about a 5K.
Or slow jog. In my case, but
you can just run all the way around this thing and be back where you started. And so that one's just that was
Does
the
it
latest.
Have a name?
They, I don't think the 12 new ones have names, but pretty much all the other 67 have a name or a designation.
They should do a contest, like they name should. Jupiter's new moons.
That's right.
I like
That's
it.
Right. I know.
I would have some ideas.
Yeah, I would say so. You have some good ideas, I'm sure.
Thank you, Dean.
So, you know, do all the planets have moons?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I thought you had to have an orbiting moon to be a planet.
That is,
did I make this up?
That is made up. It's true.
You don't have to say it like that.
A moon does not a planet make, or vice versa. You could have a planet with no moons. Mercury and Venus have no moons.
Really?
Yep. Zip. Zero. We've been looking for a long time and no moons anywhere.
Maybe they could borrow some from Jupiter. Jupiter's got plenty.
Jupiter is definitely.
Okay.
So Earth has got one. We know that, right?
Yeah.
We have some pseudo things that go with us through space also.
Okay.
There's this one that's, it's an Irish named object, and I'm going to say it how it's spelled.
Oh,
it's
Lord.
Cruintha. I have no idea how to pronounce it. I've
Cruintha?
Never seen Cruintha. Cruinthe.
That's beautiful.
It's a pseudo planet that goes with us in space.
Okay.
A pseudo moon, but it doesn't go around the Earth. It just kind of travels with us.
It's a hanger on.
Okay. Yeah. And then we got these Trojan asteroids that also go around the sun with us.
Uh huh.
I think we have one. I shouldn't have said plural. I think we only have one of those. But anyway.
Somebody fact check, Dean, please.
Yes, please fact check. So then we get to Mars. Mars has two little moons, very small.
But like, Mars is little.
It is. Mars is little. So where did it get these moons?
Yeah.
They're small. They're like city sized little chunks of rock.
Okay.
And so they're probably captured asteroids since they're close to the asteroid belt. And one of the moons goes around Mars so fast that if you're standing on Mars, you could watch it rise, go across the sky, come back around, go across the sky again, come back around for a third time, all in one day. That's how fast this moon is moving.
But because it's like an asteroid, it's in Mars's atmosphere, though. It can't get out.
It is
it's just
going to
keep spinning.
It's going to keep circling. But Phobos, one of the moons, mm-hmm.
I love that name.
Slowly...
I think it's cute.
You do?
I think it's cute. Like,
it's fear.
If I get it, I just think it's funny sounding. It's funny to me because fear, it should be a really intimidating word. It's like Phobos. Like,
right.
It kind of sounds silly.
But you laugh in the face of fear, apparently.
I do. Just laugh and just live my life.
That's, boy, wise words today from Anna. This is,
look at that.
This is, life
knew?
Lessons. But Phobos is actually slowly sinking. It's going to crash into Mars eventually.
Oh, God.
So it's going to – or break up before it hits the ground.
Okay.
And so I want to launch a Kickstarter to save Phobos. We need to save Phobos.
How?
I don't know. Okay. But it's going to take a lot of money.
Money for Phobos.
A lot of money sent through care of Dean Regas. Save. I joke about this a little bit, but I think in about a couple hundred years when we're actually visiting Mars, this could be a thing. This could be like the environmental cause.
Really?
Save Phobos.
Wow.
I'm telling you.
Forget the redwoods.
I'm telling you.
Save Phobos.
The year 2500. Just watch it. Just watch it. It's going to happen.
Well, so if Jupiter's got their new moons, whatever,
yep.
And then, some don't. Okay, fine.
Right.
Have any other planets gotten like an upgrade in their moon counts?
Yeah.
Like,
so Saturn, Uranus, Neptune have all got upgrades in their moon count.
I forgot about Neptune.
We
don't talk about Neptune enough.
I know. It's the farthest one out there. Aside from the unmentionable one, we're not going to talk about
it.
We'll talk about it in a little
bit.
Anyway. Because it has moons too, but we'll talk about it.
Yay! I mean,
So Saturn is now up to 62 moons. A lot of the new ones were discovered by the Cassini spacecraft when it was out there.
Gotta love RIP Cassini tips them out.
Yeah, I know.
Where are the moons in relation to the rings?
Yeah, so most of the big moons are in the same plane with all the rings.
Okay.
The little ones that they've been finding go in these weird orbits all in all different directions, up and down and all around. So they're probably other captured objects that came too close.
Oh, they're not, even though that they're rings or little, they're like rock, they're not actual rings there.
Well, yeah. So the rings are all, could be considered moons also, because they're just things that are going around the planet. And that's really
not
what a moon is anything that orbits a planet or anything that orbits a bigger body. So that means asteroids could have moons, Pluto could have moons, dwarf planets could have moons.
Okay.
Moons can't have moons.
I want to do a layman's version of this.
Okay.
So my little dog, Amos.
Right.
Little dog. He follows me everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He walks around me,
mm-hmm.
checks in on me, wants to see if I have a treat or food. He doesn't. He rarely leaves my side because he knows what's up. So I could be the planet. He would be my moon.
Yes, that would be that'd be a good analogy, except for you wouldn't be a planet. You'd be a minor planet, which is
maybe in your mind.
I understand. I knew that was coming. I should
come on.
I shouldn't
minor planet,
one.
Please.
But yeah, so that so the
I'm
dog
all major,
would be
baby.
The moon. That's right. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Now, the other new moons that were coming up was the planet Uranus has 27 moons.
Man.
That's been kind of holding steady. They haven't found any new ones in a while.
And they never hit each other.
No, they never hit each other. They're all, I mean, they're so far apart from each other. They're not close. And so maybe the moons of Saturn are probably the closest to hitting each other.
Well, and they have the whole rings to worry
about.
And
they have to get, watch out for rings too.
Yeah.
And there's moons inside rings. And there's moons that switch places near the rings. So Saturn's got a lot more dynamic stuff going on.
Okay.
So then that leaves Neptune. Neptune is at 14, although the 14th one, it was just found a few years ago.
Oh.
And it's still being debated. Astronomers are like, I don't know about that 14th one.
Lucky number 13 is where I want to stick.
Double check. So 13 is still the count, but I'm sold on the 14th. So
oh, you are.
I think it's there. I mean,
you heard it here first, folks.
I don't know who's the hater.
Who's the holdout?
Did
they name them all then too?
All once they're official, they get names. Eventually, it is a long process, so it doesn't come right about. But usually, whoever discovers them gets the first crack. And then if they're like, oh, I got too many things I'm naming, then it seems ridiculous.
It does.
But astronomers like, oh, I already named that one.
And they're not creative sometimes.
No, so they could take some help from other people.
Yeah.
And so that's a good example of our friend Pluto. Pluto has five known moons.
Mm-hmm.
For being such a small thing, it has a lot of things going around it.
Yeah, lots happening.
And its main moon is Charon.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a, it's just, that was a discovery, I think, in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was named after a person.
Yeah.
The discoverer saw it and then named it. After his wife, whose name was not Charon, it was Cheryl. But the Charon is also the boatman of the of the underworld.
Yeah.
So it worked well. So
I always forgot to Charon because it's
well,
C.
I've been trying to figure that out, but I met him and her this last summer, and they said how to pronounce it, and I already forget. So I apologize to the Christie family.
I know they're listening.
I know. I'm sorry about that. But I think it's Charon,
okay.
I think. And so there's all these moons out there. These are all places where people could visit. You could stand on. You could actually – they're all rocky objects. They're worlds on their own, and they need respect, don't you think?
Now I do. You just talked me into it.
Did I sell you?
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome. That's all I can do.
It's...
We're really excited to have Paul Sutter join us today. He's an astrophysicist at The Ohio State University, chief scientist for Columbus's Center of Science and Industry. He appears on the new version of In Search Of, acted and served as science advisor for the new film UFO, and is one of the guides for Astro Tours. Well, Paul, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So out of all of your many titles, I mean, I really like astrophysicist. So what's a typical day in the life of an astrophysicist like?
Oh, man, it's all fast cars and spending money and jet setting around the world and fancy clothes.
Don't I know it, brother. Don't I know it.
Yeah. No, the life of an astrophysicist is all about trying to understand how the universe works using physics, which involves a lot of emails. You wouldn't suspect the amount of emails a scientist would write, but I'm a part of a lot of collaborations. I work with astronomers, I work with observers, I work with teams of theorists and simulation experts, where we're all just trying to make sense of this vast flood of information coming into us from our instruments.
And so, and you have an interesting job with OSU, right? That's because what are you working on with them?
Yeah, exactly. I have a half-time appointment at The Ohio State University where I spend part of my time being a cosmological researcher, where cosmology is the study of the whole entire universe. It's a branch of astrophysics, or astrophysics is a branch of cosmology, depending on who you ask. And I also get to spend part of my time coordinating the community outreach efforts of the Department of Astronomy. So hosting teacher workshops, being out there in the city, inspiring a love and appreciation for the night sky.
That's pretty cool. I mean, and I am interested in that, of course, but my angle on this is I have a lot of great memories of going to COSI when I was a kid. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your role at COSI. Again, as Dean said, you're super busy. So can you tell us a little bit as well about what you do at COSI and what that's like?
Yeah, the COSI Science Center, the big science center here in downtown Columbus, I serve there as the chief scientist, and that's the other half of my joint appointment between these two institutions.
Oh, okay.
And for them, I curate the scientific content, make sure everything is legit. I help elevate the content of the team, you know, editing and proofreading and working with them. I liaison back to OSU to bring in other experts outside my field of expertise, which turns out to be most of science. And then I serve as the public face of science for the museum. So doing interviews, being in the media, showing people the wondrousness, wonderfulness of the scientific enterprise.
Well, and so you probably get a ton of questions from the public and, some pretty wild ones. We try to deal with some of them here head on. But, you know, your conspiracy theories you hear around and you've been working with that the new reboot of In Search Of. How do you deal with like some wild questions thrown your way?
Right. And I get this in my live shows or when I'm online doing live. Or during my own radio show, I will get, you know, some pretty out there questions. Do you believe in the flat Earth? Do you believe that aliens visit us? And I always treat these questions with respect. I never, ever tell people what to believe, but I'm also not afraid to share what I believe and, more importantly, why I believe it. How I look at the world through a scientific lens and that how that informs the decisions of what to believe or what not to believe. It's about that sharing. It's about showing how I personally arrived at these conclusions and how my scientific colleagues around the world have arrived at similar conclusions is the most important part to me.
Wow, I just answer no and no to those two questions. But okay, I guess
and he gets really mad about it.
You can just do that too.
Okay, all right.
You can just do that too.
I'll say no because from now on. That's what I'll say. I'll add one extra.
Or you'll say, what do you think?
That's a good one
that you do. Like, he'll say, like, well, why do you think the Earth is flat? I think you did a good job with that, Dean.
That was from teaching school.
There's
no wrong answers.
There you go.
Good answer. Good question.
Yeah, but
anyway.
Oh, man. Well, so something else that you've got going on your very full plate, Paul, is doing this astro tours. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Astro
you, like, forgot about it. You're like, I do that, don't I?
Oh, yeah,
That thing.
So tell us a little bit more about that. That sounds cool.
Oh, man. This is one of the highlights of the things I get to do. And Astro Tours is a company that I co-founded with a guy by the name of Nick DePalma, who runs Spacetime Labs out of D.C. And it's a way for scientists and science communicators to connect with audiences in a very, very intimate circumstance by just taking 1, 2, 3 dozen people, putting them on a plane with their favorite scientist or science communicator, going somewhere amazing like Iceland or Ireland or northern Chile or Hawaii.
Wow.
And experiencing the science of that location together, having an amazing trip, having tons of fun, and learning a little bit about the way the universe works.
That's amazing.
Well, so you just did a trip to Iceland not too long ago. I'm going in September. Any recommendations?
Oh, Iceland is one of my favorite places. So, and because it's so small and most of the population lives in Reykjavik, the capital, it's very easy to do day trips. It's very easy to rent a car and to hit the major tourist sites. And I know that sounds like lame, like, oh, just go to the most popular places. But the most popular places are popular for a reason, because they have stunning natural beauty. And just going to those highlights is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience.
And you had auroras, northern lights every single night, right?
Absolutely not. we went in January when the length of the day is something like 6 hours of daylight. And we were hoping to catch a lot of aurora. And then a freak storm came in 2 days into the trip. We were shut down. We were locked into our hotel because all the roads were closed by police order. And the winds were too high. It was insane. It was an experience for sure. We only had one night that we could actually see the aurora.
Oh, well, you saw it once. That's good. Because I heard about your snow in.
Once.
I thought
we saw one. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to do the, I'm going to be working with you guys for the Ireland trip next May. I can't wait to do that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I know.
What if you're
we're
not
so
a...
excited about that trip. Go
what
ahead.
If you're not a scientist, Paul, but you maybe could insert a sarcastic, funny comment here or there to keep things lively? What about someone like that going on the trip?
Could that be a tour guide?
That would be me.
You know what?
I think you figured that out.
Anna, you can buy your ticket at astrotours.co/Ireland, and you can go on that trip.
I could.
It will just cost you a little bit of money.
That's right.
But hey, I think that's a fair trade.
And still make my comments.
Even
as a paying
no
member of the trip.
No one's going to stop you.
I'll buy you one Guinness.
One Guinness. All right.
There you go.
There you go. You're already part of the way there. Well, Paul, thanks so much for talking to us today. How could people find out more about AstroTours?
It's just astrotours.co or astro.tours. We'll take you to the same place. And there we have links to all of our live trips, including our wonderful trip to Ireland to explore the culture and history of Ireland and do some amazing stargazing with everyone's favorite stargazing storyteller, Dean Regas, the eminent. And
I was going to stop you.
I was going to say, you weren't going to stop him.
I was thinking, I was like,
no,
oh.
No, you weren't.
Just
that.
Let it roll. Just let it roll.
Yeah, let that roll. Don't cut
and,
that part.
And all the other trips, but that is going to be a real gem of a trip.
Well, Paul, thanks so much. It's been a
Thank
lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks so much again for having me.
We've been talking with Paul Sutter from COSI, Ohio State, Astro Tours, and In Search Of, and much more. Thanks so much for your time, Paul.
Well, the Cincinnati Observatory has lots of kids visiting all year round, and Dean goes out on talks to groups and classes, and so we get some great kid questions. And I want to share one or ask Dean one now, but it's actually, spoiler alert, it's not a kid question.
Who's it from?
Me.
Oh, my goodness.
I know I was going to, like, ask you another time, but I haven't had a chance, so.
All right.
Now that we're on the air.
Throw it at me. I'm ready.
Okay. I should have owned up to this one, but I really want to know what you think about Stonehenge.
Stonehenge.
I got close to the mic on that to try to, like, add drama.
Yeah.
Do you think it was made by aliens? Talk to me.
Let me see if I can use Paul Sutter's technology. What's his trick? No. It was not made by aliens. Because.
That's stupid.
No, because. Okay. All right. Let me do the little longer
The
answer.
System has broken down.
All right, Paul. Thanks for the inspiration.
Oh,
I guess
God.
I'll entertain this question.
Uh-huh.
I'll go with it.
You seem flustered.
I am
flustered. Like you maybe you're thinking, oh God, she figured it out.
Oh my God. Finally.
Yeah.
So nobody else has figured out before you did. You figure out finally.
I just put it together,
oh,
man.
Oh my gosh. Nobody ever thought of aliens for that.
Oh man.
Well, okay. So all the engineering might of Stonehenge is pretty impressive. I do have to say. So here's something that's almost 5,000 years old. This ring of stones that was set up from this group of people that set up these stones.
Let's just say
a group of people. But let's say if it was humans that did it, it was a lot to do. And so they gathered around this group of people and said, okay, we're going to build this calendar. We're going to make it out of stones. We're going to get the stones from not here. We're going to drag them 19 miles uphill.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to cut them over there. They're going to be multi-ton stones. We're going to drag them uphill. We're going to set them upright, and then we're going to put things on top of it and make a ring out of them. What do you think? Are you in?
Ain't No way.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
How did they motivate the population to do this? How did they even move them? Uh-huh. They've tried to recreate how they did this, like with some specials. Okay. Like they get some, you know, some soccer hooligans from the pub out there and they drag a stone a few feet and they're like, yeah, we did it. That's right. Look, we can do it.
Stonehenge, the sequel.
That's right. Uh-huh. But it's a really tough thing. Now, so what it tells me is, so they set up these stones where that you can see the sunrise and sunset in between the stones. That's basically what mm-hmm. they're trying to do, is to be a giant calendar. And they made it out of stones because stones will last thousands of years. Before they had the stones, they had a ring of posts that were sticking up. And those are all rotted and gone.
Okay.
Then they had mounds before that. And the mounds are still kind of there. But the stones, they wanted something that would last a long time. And this is something that's really, really important to be able to tell time in the ancient world. And I do have to say that I think that there was a little bit of showing off going on here. They're like,
showing off?
Yeah, they're like, hey, you know, we can drag stones better than anybody else. Look at this.
And they could have done 15 miles, but they did 19.
They did 19.
Above and beyond, really.
Exactly. And so it is a pretty amazing feat that here's a group of people that was, you know, they didn't have a written language. Mm-hmm. How did they compute all this stuff? How did they organize it? And so... that's why the aliens idea has been thrown out. But I, mm-hmm. being a very big fan of humans, think that human ingenuity is the cause. And ancient peoples were a little smarter than we think.
Did you just say you're a really big fan of humans?
I'm a big fan of humans. Yeah, I like humans. They're my favorite people.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Now, there's another site that is going to be very interesting because I don't know if you heard, I might be going to Ireland next year.
Okay.
With AstroTours, plug AstroTours.
Tell me more.
So there's a site in Ireland called New Grange.
Uh-huh.
It's this giant mound. It doesn't get as much like publicity as Stonehenge because it's just this big basically mound with some rocks around it.
Okay.
But it's older than Stonehenge and had a really specific purpose. They had this hole that went into the center of the mound and has these beautiful artistic drawings around it, these swirls, and it's really cool looking. But it was made so that the sunlight would come through the hole into the back of the mound on the winter solstice. Every year on the winter solstice,
dang.
It goes through this one place and lights up the back of the wall. And so they built this giant mound for
That's
one
very
day of the year, isn't it?
They had a lot of time on their hands.
They had a lot.
No
of
pun
time.
Intended.
Exactly. And then they're like, what if they messed up by 2 degrees? They're like, oh.
It actually is on the day before the winter solstice.
Started all over. But this is the thing, is they had to figure this stuff out. And time, they had a lot of time.
Yeah.
But it's one of those sites. So Stonehenge and New Grange, these are like some amazing things from the British Isles. And a lot of stargazers that were there that they thought this was what we got to do with our time.
That's the best use of our time is to do this.
Right. Let's not worry about crops or survival. Let's just build
I'm going to do an astro tour to Stonehenge and I'm going to promote my alien theory.
Oh, that'd be good. We'll see what they say. And then you'll buy me a beer.
Oh,
when
yeah.
We get
I'll
there
buy
too.
You a whatever in English, harps. Is that a thing?
I don't know.
I don't know either. So. Whatever.
Oh, man. We just lost those listeners.
Man. Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Paul Sutter for joining us. You'll find links to Paul and the movie UFO on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
We'd love to hear from you. On social media, you can find us on Facebook. Just search Looking Up WVXU. And on Twitter, we're at Looking Up Podcast. You can also drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Parents, we hope you'll share Looking Up with your kids and send us any questions they may have. We could read one on the air. Hit us up with an email or ask your question on Facebook or Twitter.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts. And give us a rating and comment on iTunes. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.